Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. A man sees his life flash before his eyes as he falls from the sky. There's a list of thoughts that goes through his mind: love, loss, and regret, and an image of his son. This is a scene from Everything Inside, a new collection of short stories by Haitian-American novelist Edwige Danticat. Death and how people come to terms with it is a central theme of her latest book. Most of the short stories take place in locales like Miami and Haiti.
In this book, this collection, is the first time that I feel that I have written about a place where I actually live.
Danticat was born in Haiti, lived in New York, now lives in Miami. She's been here since the early 2000s. She joined Sundial last week, and we talked about her book, The Haitian Immigrant Experience, and how she views mortality. In this book, the two themes that jump out at me a lot are death and this love-hate relationship people have with their home country, in this case, Haiti. Why are you so drawn to these topics? Because I see these over and over in your stories.
Death, I feel like, even as a young person, was something that sort of haunted me and fascinated me as a subject. Because in many ways, it's an unsolvable subject. And I even tried, you know, a little bit to solve it in this book that I would call The Art of Death, writing the final story, which deals with how writers write about death.
But your 2017 book.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of the appeal maybe to me is the unknowable. But also I grew up in a house in Haiti where my uncle was a minister, and our weekends would be often a funeral Saturday morning, a wedding in the afternoon, and the church service on Sunday. So I got to experience that whole cycle of life, and it wasn't unusual for me as a young woman, you know, to be sitting there like with the minister's family looking at a coffin. So death and sort of what happens after has always been fascinating to me.
I'm wondering, how do you view your own mortality?
Well, I have, you know, I'm 50 now, which is a nice round age. And I've started writing in a public way, like publishing at 25, which was also another round age. So you sort of have these anniversaries. And again, watching when your parents have passed on, you feel like, I felt like that sort of they were between me and, you know, whatever the next step was. But since they've passed on, you feel like, oh, it's just me and whatever the ceiling is. So I'm quite aware of my mortality, maybe too much for some of my friends, and even for this conversation.
How is this book connected, though, too? Because I kept thinking about The Art of Death, and I kept thinking, there's a connection here. What is that connection?
Well, you know, in short stories, and I'm so glad, I understand this is one of the first short story books you've done on this book club. And I think, in a way, short stories are perfect for book clubs, right? Because you can pick one up, you read it, and then you sort of mull that over and you go to the next one. But the task for the writer is to curate a collection, right? How do they fit together? And for me, they were joined by several things. Like I wanted to have an even number of stories, like eight, so that you have four kinds and then four of another type. But what joined them for me was certainly this a theme of love, love of family, love of country, and complicated love, certainly, but love, and certain rituals that is carried through death and grief. And how do we mourn away from the homes that we knew, away from the places where we were shaped? How do we love? How do we mourn? How do we raise our children? How do we do all that without the guidance of the elders?
When did you start writing these stories?
The earliest one is 2006. I moved here in 2002. So they span a really broad, you know, almost over a decade. But I kept returning back to them, and some of them had been published in different forms, but I kept going back to them, and I'm sort of that kind of writer. Like if I have an opportunity to tweak and start over with a story, that I just have taken it until the very last possible point of no return in the publication cycle.
Let's look at a couple of these stories. We'll start with the first one, the story of Elsie. Mm-hmm. She's a caretaker, and one day she gets a call from her ex-husband. He's distraught. He tells her that his lover had been kidnapped in Haiti and they were demanding money. What were you trying to explore with the story about Elsie?
Elsie is a young woman who is a caretaker, as you mentioned, and it's a job that I think a lot of immigrant women take on. You know, when people come here, it's one of these somewhat quick entry jobs where you might go to a school and learn how to care for people, older people, sick people. And she's one of them that sometimes you see in the mall accompanying an older person throughout their day, sometimes in a uniform. And I wanted to explore sort of this complicated internal life that she had, these dreams that she had had with a man that she loved that then got sidetracked. And then this friendship that she had embraced that turns on her. And also that sort of a really sensitive dynamic. And I think in many communities where this relationship of, you know, for example, remittances, you know, for every diaspora community keeps a lot. It's a big part of the budget of the home community. But there's also this sort of pull and tug where people are sometimes, am I being like bamboozled? Like, does that person really need that money for school? Or is they, and that sort of strange relationship where this and this, without giving too much away, you know, plays out where someone calls with an urgent need. And then then Elsie is in this position, like, how do I respond? And she responds in a way that is humane, you know, that is really beyond expectations, given the complicated relationship that this, you know, her husband had left her for this woman that he said was kidnapped. And then he has a rather bit of a twist.
Yes, definitely. Well, what does the profession of the caretaker tell us about her empathy and trust of other people?
Well, she, you know, she says it herself in the story that, you know, especially when other parts of her, you know, her humanity is tested, where she's like, I'm meant to care for people. And I think, you know, I was listening to Malcolm Gladwell do a talk about his book, Talking to Strangers, where he talks about something called the truth default. I think most of us want to trust people, you know, like we want to believe that people are always telling us the truth. And even in this job, she's trained to care for other people. And that's the also like that duality of the immigrant, that's something that happened in my own life, where we have women, men too, but women who leave their children sometimes in other countries, you know, in their homeland, while they're here taking care of the children of other people, or they leave their elder parents and they're taking care of older people here. And they're doing that so that they can send money back home so that their elders and their children can be taken care of. So it's a really strong part of the immigrant experience.
I'm speaking with Haitian American author Edwige Dantakot. She's the author of several books like Breath, Eyes, Memory, The Art of Death, and many others. Her newest book, Everything Inside, is this month's Sundial Book Club. It's a short story collection that explores how people come to terms with their own death and that of their loved ones. Let's get to the other topic you were talking about a minute ago. And it's, I don't know if you call it patriotism, but it's the struggle that people have with their home country. And, you know, some people desperately want to go home, and other people, the thought of it is such a turnoff. They don't want to step foot back on it. Tell me what that relationship is with Haitian Americans in Haiti.
There is something about Haiti that is very hard to explain, like how much how deep that love goes. And I think in part it's because it's always been sort of underestimated from the beginning, from the creation of the nation. So we as Haitians feel that pride that we accomplished this great, that our nation was birthed out of this impossible revolution, yet we did it. And for the, you know, centuries that followed now, you know, it's always been struggle, but there's been this hope that, you know, it's almost like if you have, you know, it's like we're the underdog and we sort of love, we want to embrace our country, we want to lift it up. So that's there's that a lot of the characters have that, because Haiti, no matter what's happening for them here, is always in the back of their mind. They always have someone there. But at the same time, they're like, well, why can't it be better? You know, there's that pull and tug.
You know, it's always interesting in conversations with Haitians, depending on their age, you know, obviously the stories of Papa Doc and Baby Doc come up. Different generations have a different take on that, mm-hmm, though. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even after all these years, it's still there. That I don't think it'll ever go away.
Yeah, I can't quite explain it. I think in part, it's parents who, for a lot of And even in the homes, there's that duality of like the parents who are like, you come from a great people, the Haitian Revolution, first Black Republic. And then the young people would say, well, I want to go see it. And the parents are like, not now. You know, maybe next year, you know. And so there's that whole, like, and then young people who, so you have the idealization, especially in this, in Miami, it's like one of the places I've seen it most with, like, the wearing of the flag, doing, in May, doing Haitian Heritage Month and all the different celebrations. And young people who've never been to Haiti, but will talk about it with so much love. So it is generational, I think. The closer you get to this period, the more, you know, some younger people, they have a kind of idealization about it. And they're this approach to kind of like, you know, the beaches, we want to see the positives. We don't want to talk about the negatives and such.
Well, you talk about the negatives. I mean, think about what's happening now. I mean, you have these protests with the current president. And I'm wondering what you're thinking when you see that. You see all this happening. Because it's interesting you just said, you know, it's like, not now, not yet. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you see all this happening. What's going through your mind
when you talk to young people? And I was there, and I was in Haiti last year when the at the early onset of the protests. And you would, when you go through, you know, it wasn't as intense as it is now. And you try to go through the barricades, you might have a conversation with a young men, and there were mostly young men at the barricades there, and they will tell you they want change. You know, they want they want a society that can give them a future, that allows for their children to have a future. They want an end to the corrupt leadership and sort of the endless misery that a lot of them have to go through. And so it's about, you know, a stop to the continuation of just how things have always been. And I think you have also a new generation there that is looking at what's happening in other parts of the world, right, where people are protesting, where they're out, and there's a sense that they're part of a larger movement toward change, where people who have been oppressed, who have been economically, you know, displaced, are asking for a place at the table.
Let's get back to the book. I want to get back to this theme of death and to one of the stories. And you're going to read a portion for us. This is the story Without Inspection. What I found so fascinating is because you tackle death from the point of view of a person about to die. And I'm going to let you just go ahead and give us this reading first before we jump back in. But I'll just move aside and let you go ahead.
It took Arnold 6.5 seconds to fall 500 feet. During that time, an image of his son, Paris, flashed before his eyes. Paris, dressed in his red school uniform shirt and khakis the day of his kindergarten graduation. That morning, Paris's mother, Darlene, had skipped around the apartment, changing dresses, as if she were the one graduating. Closing his eyes tightly, as the hot wind he was plunging through battered his face, Arnold saw Paris at the classroom ceremony. He saw himself, too, standing next to Darlene, who had finally chosen a billowing sapphire-colored satin dress. He was in the one black suit he wore to everything, to weddings and to funerals. One reason not to own too many things was their crammed two-bedroom apartment, but the other, at least for him, had to do with never wanting to feel bound. To be attached to a few people was fine, to Paris and to Darlene, who were as much a part of him as his blood was, but he never wanted to be tied to things, to clothes and shoes, gathering dust and packed closets, to a fancy car that required hefty payments every month. No, it was simpler to be free as this fall, which he had neither intended nor chosen, this dive that had resulted from his left foot slipping off the scaffold and his body sliding out of his either loosened or broken safety harness, as though a wrathful hand had pulled the straps off him, tipped him on his side, and tossed him into the air. Then his body, attempting to regain some control, had corrected the angle at which he had begun falling, so that he was now plummeting headfirst toward the ground, which was not yet concrete, but dirt and soil, from which weeds, bushes, and flowers had been plucked to make way for a 48-story hotel. He was still falling, faster by the second. The wind felt increasingly resistant, each gust a hard blue veil to pierce through, even as the ground rose to meet him. His body veered farther left, and directly below him was an open cement mixer chute attached to a truck, the kind that had always looked like a spaceship to him.
I love this story because it's the point of view of a person facing their mortality in the final seconds. Where did the inspiration for that story come from?
When I first moved from New York here to Miami, there are two things that were regularly happening that I took notice of. And one was boatloads of people who were landing on Key Biscayne and other places. And then the second one was the people who were, every now and then, a person would be said to have fallen from a construction site. And there was a horrible case of one man who fell in like a quick cement even, and you would watch it on the news and it was the same. And then there was a statement from the construction company about investigations and so forth. And those things kind of gelled in my mind as a kind of first impression of like of now being a resident of this place. And so I had written a story about people coming from Haiti by boat and Krikrak called Children of the Sea. And it occurred to me at that time that suddenly there were updates to how this migration was happening. And now sometimes it was through the Bahamas, then it was speedboats, and people were told when they got within, you know, view of the beach to swim. And a lot of people couldn't swim, and there were some drownings resulting of that. So I want to tell the story from a point of view of a man who had gone through both of those things. And he tells the story as he's, you know, the story is written from his perspective as he's falling. And obviously the story is meant to be compressed and, you know, those seconds that he's falling, it is not. But what I also wanted to explore was that it's something that I personally experienced. It is that moment where someone is said to be dead, and then, well, the world doesn't know it yet, right? And I'd experienced that with my mother, where after she took her last breath, and then I had to tell the people outside that room with us, and then I had to call my brothers in New York to tell them, and then I remember lingering in that moment, and it's something I explore also in another story in the book called In the Old Days, and I remember just cherishing that moment where it's just like, well, maybe, you know, in that silence of that gap, that she's not yet gone, you know, because I haven't told everyone yet. And then I wondered, like, what is happening in this moment? Is she traveling? And what is happening to the body? What is happening to the mind? And where is she going? That's the premise, really, of that story of, like, of someone, what happens in that sort of gap between life and death.
Edwige Dantakot, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
That was Haitian-American author Edwige Dantakot. Her newest book, Everything Inside, is this month's Sundial Book Club. And that's Sundial for this Tuesday, November 12th. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington and Alejandra Martinez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zabka. Our technical supervisor, Peter J. Meritz. A note to our listeners about today's program. We had a scheduled interview with the director and CEO of Miami International Airport today, Lester Sola. He unfortunately needed to cancel for personal reasons. We're working to reschedule that conversation. Now, coming up tomorrow, we will bring you live special coverage from NPR of the impeachment briefings from Washington, D.C. It starts at 10 a.m. Ambassador William Taylor, the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent are set to testify. At 8 p.m., we're going to bring you NPR's one-hour recap of the impeachment hearings. You can always find the latest impeachment news coverage at WLRN.org. And by the way, again, as I mentioned, don't forget our Sundial Book Club. Go to Facebook, look up Sundial Book Club, ask to join. It's free. We'd love to have you. Again, we're reading Edwige Dantakot for November. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial or at WLRN.org. Always let us know what you think of the program. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.